You know, it was late in February. There was this story. On the one hand, it was kind of an innocuous story. Apple's going to close up a couple of stores and open a big store in Galleria. But then you look at it, and what they're doing is they're getting out of Collin County, out of Frisco and out of Plano. And the story really, for me, took a bizarre turn when they said that they were trying to avoid trolls. The Eastern District Court of Texas has evidently supported lawsuits and from patent trolls. They've been successful, and Apple wants to get out of them, so we need to go to school on this and find out what's going on. David Predoms, chairman and CEO of Dallas-based Dominion Harbor, and since they were founded in 2013, they've acquired more than 11,000 patents. It's good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me, David.
You're not a troll, are you?
I am not.
So what is a troll?
Well, I think a troll in reality is someone that lives under a bridge and extorts onerous charges to get across the bridge. But I think the whole narrative of troll is something that really has come out of a lobby that emanated from Northern California during the Obama years that sought to weaken patent rights in the United States.
So patent rights transfer with a company's transfer. Or if a company, there are cases where I gather a company has gone bankrupt or virtually bankrupt, and somebody can come in and buy their patent inventory.
Oh, right? Sure. We've done that with, for example, the Kodak portfolio we bought several years ago. But it really, if you think about a patent right, what you want to think about is a property right. So you think about your home, your property. What is a deed? A deed is something that sets forth the meets and the bounds of your property.
Right.
On that, on those meets and bounds, you can do certain things, exclude others, charge rents, improve the land. That's exactly what a patent is. It's a deed to intellectual property. And in the patent, it sets forth those meets and bounds. And if anyone tries to intrude on your intellectual property, you can charge rent. You can charge royalties.
So is this like, you know, buying the contents of some of these storage facilities that somebody's not paying the rent on? You don't really know what's in there? Or do you know what you've got when you're buying all this intellectual property?
I think for some people it could be like that. And certainly if you take a look at the whole patent system, back in the early 2000s, there was a need for reform, right? Companies who bought patents bought them on speculation, sort of thinking like the gold rush, and said, look, we'll buy a bunch of patents, then we'll go out and just take this number of patents and try to extort license fees from large companies. On the other hand, there are large companies out there who like to encroach on others' intellectual property rights. Think a large company like a Google or an Apple who sees some really neat technology developed by a small company or an individual inventor, and they don't want to pay a royalty.
Right.
So they just encroach on it because they're so large, and in order to enforce your patent rights these days, you have to spend a lot of time and a lot of money. So if you think about a patent in the United States, one of the important things is to look at where that right comes from, right? The founding fathers wrote that into the Constitution because they looked at the British system of doing things. And as always, it was a little bit backwards, right? It said that if you were wealthy, if you were the East India Tea Company, if you were a large corporation, you could get a patent. Small inventors, individual inventors couldn't do that. There would be no Thomas Edison or Alexander Graham Bell or Charles Goodyear in Great Britain, right? The wealthy benefited, the poor didn't, and the founding fathers wanted to change that. So they said, what we'll do is we'll create a compact. If you're an inventor and you invent something new and novel, and you describe how to do it, you disclose that so that everyone can see what your invention is, and in return, we'll grant you a limited time monopoly. 18 years to 20 years, depending on the period of time.
Yeah, and let me jump in, because see, to this point, I'm with you. And in my mind, you know, I'm thinking Eli Whitney bringing in a little tiny cotton gin or something.
Yeah, yeah.
But then you make the leap to intellectual property, and that's where some of us get lost. Something you can't see.
Well, that's true, but it is something that generates significant benefit, and
yeah.
It is something that's derived from intellectual capital, right? So if you look at IBM, right? IBM is the grandfather of technology companies in the world. IBM has over 100,000 patents, 10,000 inventions every year. None of them you can see. None of them are tangible. You can't touch them. But because of the progress our country has made in AI and Internet of Things,
right.
Those intangible concepts, if they're reduced to paper and if they can be disclosed, should be patentable.
Well, it's kind of like our economy. I mean, we're 80% a service economy and 20% manufacturing. And all the stuff you can't see.
Yeah, I think that's right. But also, if you look at large the large manufacturing companies in this country, if you look at the big three, they are still patenting.
Right.
They are patenting actively. And also, if you take a look at Apple, I mean, Apple files 10,000 plus patent applications a year. About half of those are on hardware.
And we see a jillion coming out of Texas Instruments every year.
That's it.
So carry me forward. So you all got a lot of patent rights from Eastman Kodak when Eastman Kodak, went under, went bust. So what do you do with it? I mean, you're not going to make cameras with those.
We are not going to make cameras. No.
So what happens? I mean, why did you buy those?
We bought those to take them to market and to license them. So what we've done, and our model is a little bit different, right? We are not one of those companies that goes to the storage facility and bids a couple $100 and gets something they don't know what's in there. We very carefully analyze a portfolio like the Kodak portfolio. I mean, look, that portfolio is blue chip. It is American made, American invented. And we take that portfolio to market in different ways. We really don't like to use the courts. 90%+ of our licensing revenue comes from just having a discussion. So last week, we were in Japan licensing the Kodak portfolio to companies like Olympus Camera, like Konica Minolta, really? Like NEC. And we go sit down and we make a business case. In some cases, we just do a license and we say, look, if you look at the Kodak portfolio and then compare it to your portfolio using our technology, you see that the Kodak portfolio is much better.
But you got to have some bright guys and eclectic people. They can go through a big inventory of patent rights and see what's useful and what's not.
That certainly is right. And one of the stories I tell folks is back when we were first doing this, what we used to do is we worked for Jay Walker, who founded Priceline. And he had about 1,000 patents. And we printed them all up, all the PDFs, stapled them, put them on a conference room table. And we'd leaf through them. And we'd have three piles, green, yellow, and red. And we'd say, okay, this one looks like a green, meaning a good patent. Yellow, I don't know, it's a little complicated for me.
Yeah.
And red, nope, don't think so. So that's how we used to do it. When we formed Dominion, what we did is we hired some software engineers to develop a technology platform where you could put 20,000 patents in the platform and it will green, yellow,
really?
Red for you, sort them, separate them, and help you take them to market. And so that's what we've developed and that's what we utilize.
So how do you make, do you package these? Are you like, can I invest with you? Is it like a mutual fund that instead of stocks owns a bunch of patents?
Well, as much as I'd like your money, we have never taken outside money. It's all we've all funded that internally with our three partners. But we primarily work at packaging, licensing portfolios for companies. In rare instances, we'll sell portfolios. So, for example, a couple of years ago, based on our software analysis, we found a very cool portfolio in the field of carbon nanotubes. And carbon nanotubes is a technology that allows an LCD screen to fold.
Right.
So think the new Samsung Galaxy
Note.
So we bought that out of Konica a couple of years ago, got a great deal on it, and we continued to prosecute it. And now we're in the process of selling that portfolio to Samsung. And so we were sort of forward looking. What's cool about this business is you look at the past, you see what folks have patented, you look at the present, what people are doing now, and then you say, you know, we see patent applications from Samsung and Apple that talk about folding displays. Let's get ahead of that and buy some patents.
That's fascinating. I just your insight. What this Eastern District Court of Texas that everybody seems to be, or at least Apple seems to be trying to avoid. Do you have experience with them?
I do.
And are they friendly to people who are patent trolls or are looking for patent activity? Why does a court, what are they based in, Tyler or Marshall or someplace?
The Eastern District covers that broad region of East Texas, including Tyler and Marshall. Those are where the courts sit, and then Sherman and a few other spots, Texarkana. This is another instance where perception is different than reality. So I'm a lawyer by training, practiced corporate law in Silicon Valley for a couple of years before going in-house. And I've actually tried some cases out in East Texas back in about 10 years ago, and I sort of stopped practicing law when we founded our current business. But what's interesting is the Eastern Texas judges are really good, and there's been a lot of turnover over the past few years, and I think all judges try to be fair. But for some reason, East Texas was labeled during that marketing campaign several years ago by Big Tech as pro patent owner and anti large company. I was out in Apple a couple of weeks ago, and I told them, I said, look, I love the fact that you're opening a store in the Galleria. That's great. My daughter has her skating lessons there on Saturday morning, so I'm sure I'll be a frequent customer. But when you react in such a way and you're a company like Apple and start closing stores because of the fact that a federal court might, or a jury might, not think highly of your claims, you know, that is probably symptomatic of another issue and not something you should react so violently towards, right? So I think if you look at the win rates in East Texas for a patent owner, they're lower than they are in many other places in the country. So I think that's, again, the perception has been created, but it's not reality.
I have enjoyed this conversation. I've learned a lot. This is a fascinating, this is a growth business you're in too, isn't it?
Hey, we like to think so, yeah.
I would imagine. David Pratt is the chairman and CEO of Dominion Harbor. It's good to have you with us.
Thank you, David.
Thanks a lot. I'm David Johnson, News Radio 1080 KRLD.